Welcome to Food News. I'm Juliette Littman.
Hold on. We got to start over. I need to see Wargs.
Why?
I just want to see him. I like to see his reaction, see what he's up to. I like to see.
All right. He was just doing his job.
Look at a smile. If I say something funny, he'll laugh. That'll help.
Yeah. You want a crowd. You want the positive reinforcement
I like
of easy
exactly.
crowd.
Wargs. I have a very fragile ego. Okay.
What's up, guys? Rachel Lindsay here, and I am teaming up with your favorite Ringer podcasters to deliver the Bravo drama and news that you've been craving on Morally Corrupt. It's the show about all things Bravo, from the Housewives to Summer House and everything in between. We'll be mentioning it all every week. Check it out on Spotify and theringer.com.
This episode is brought to you by Max. The new HBO original limited series, The Sympathizer, is an espionage thriller and cross-culture satire that follows a communist spy during the final days of the Vietnam War and his new life as a refugee in Los Angeles. From executive producers Park Chan-wook and Robert Downey Jr. and based on the Pulitzer Prize-winning novel, The Sympathizer is streaming now exclusively on Max. Tap the banner or visit this episode's page to learn more.
Just because you wrestle alligators for a living doesn't mean you should have the skin of one. Say goodbye to dry and cracked skin with Old Spice Super Hydration Body Wash with vitamin B3. Made for 24/7 renewing moisturization with daily use. With scents of vanilla and shea, people will think you've taken up candle making as one of your hobbies. And there is nothing wrong with that. Old Spice Super Hydration Body Wash. Shop Old Spice now.
Welcome to Food News. I'm Juliette Littman.
And I'm David Jacoby.
Let's put 30 minutes on the
30
clock.
30 minutes.
Jacoby, let's just be up front. We're not together today. You're in Miami.
We're not today.
I'm in New York.
I'm in Miami covering the Eastern Conference Finals Game 3.
I'll be asking you about the food in Miami as we get to food news, as we get to personal food news. But
oh, great.
Listen, we no taste test today, but it doesn't matter because Mike Wargs, our producer, Mikey Wargs, put together a fantastic rundown, and we
so many good stories
are going to get into it right now, beginning in one of my favorite publications, or I should say most read publications, the New York Post. I can't say
favorite. Very big difference.
Yeah.
Very big difference.
Can't say favorite, but certainly read very, very frequently. A lot of people were tweeting about this. Perhaps you're aware, Anna Wintour, there's a biography coming out about her. So her lunch order went viral on social media.
This is the best story I think we've ever had.
So Anna Wintour's go-to lunch when she was working at the World Trade Center was a steak and caprese salad without the tomatoes from the nearby Palm restaurant. Palm is like a fancy steakhouse chain. You've probably heard of it. Mm. And basically this means she got steak with a side of cheese. And that's in basil.
It looked like I go to this particular Palm because I now live in that neighborhood. And it looks like the petite filet, I want to call it. It's like an 8-ounce filet. Mm-hmm, probably gets it medium. And the caprese salad, there's a picture really helped. The caprese
really
salad
did.
Without cheese is just two slices of high quality buffalo mozzarella. But there's a drizzle on it. You get the drizzle on there.
Yeah, it's a drizzle of like, it looks like a basil olive oil to me, you know?
So if you ask a nutritionist, you're like, what are two things I should avoid? They'll be like red meat and cheese. And Anna Wintour is like leaning into that. Like, guess what?
I mean, it's working, I guess. She seems to be in good health. You're in her 70s. She's seems fit. But a couple other important details. First of all, this costs $77.33 for her go-to lunch. That's like being
it.
Like, my go-to lunch for me is like, you know, God willing, Chopped. $15. Great. $77? I mean, come on.
That's including the tip. And I'm sure she tips well. Another detail I loved about it was the plating. Explain the plating of the salad.
Well, I'm just going to read directly from the article. The deluxe dish would arrive in a ceramic plate provided by the Palm and then would be replated by an assistant.
Replated. So, no, not by the assistant, Juliet. Not by the assistant. By the second assistant. There's a hierarchy. It's like below deck. There's the stew, the second stew, third stew. The second assistant would get it. It comes on a plate. And
also,
then she would have to unplate that plate, replate to the other plate so she has a fresh plate.
It's wild. Also, for many years, only until recently, they were keeping the plates. They didn't return them to the Palm. So it was just like, be in the office kitchen. So is the Palm factoring in the cost of the plate into this meal? I hope they are.
Well, if you think about it, so it said like she would get it like 3 or 4 times a week or whatever. So all right, mm-hmm. So these plates are getting, imagine they're getting cleaned, but they're not getting like reused.
No.
So at this Vogue office, they just have a stack. It's like Ratatouille. They have a stack of like 50 Gross. Plates just stacking up and stacking up. It's like beer bottles in a college dorm or something. It's just like, and this is how many lunches I've had from the Palm. Then they start recycling the plates. When I looked at the picture, I was like, that looks like a pretty good lunch, if you ask me. It looks pretty good.
It does look good. Also, I will say, I don't know if it's like good heart health, but that's a good paleo lunch, you know? Cheese and meat. No carbs.
And I don't like tomatoes, but I do like tomatoes in certain environments.
It's insane.
And a caprese salad, I enjoy tomatoes.
We used to go to Corner Bakery Cafe for lunch together a lot, which I miss. I'd like to have a Corner Bakery Cafe in my
solid
life.
Solid lunch. They yeah. Like just, a free little bread cookie thing.
Yeah, totally. You would always get your salads without tomatoes. And like, I genuinely don't understand. Like tomato is like part of the fabric of a salad to me. Like it's a must.
I don't like tomatoes. I think
so
they're
weird.
Gross and slimy.
Do you like them cooked?
No, it's Freudian. Okay. My very first tomato, Clem Selden was my neighbor, grew a tomato. He's like, do you want a tomato? And I'm like, 4. And he gave me this tomato. And I remember the moment. I sit down at the dining room table and I bite into it and the slime squirts all over my cheeks. So I took like a huge apple bite of it and the slime and the seeds just like spread all over my face. And I was horrified. And ever since then, I don't like tomatoes, but I do like tomatoes on a caprese salad, unlike Anna Wintour.
So bizarre. Let's move on, but stay kind of on topic. Relatedly, we have previously talked about Dolly Parton on 2 occasions. 1, we tried the Dolly Parton Jenny's ice cream, which was very good. 2, we talked about the TikTok musical that's coming about the Mexican pizza.
Yes, a lot of Dolly Parton content.
Taco Bell. So we did a food news follow-up, and we've learned 2 crucial items. So first of all, well, more than 2, but as related to our previous conversations. Number 1. Dolly Parton, I would like to recommend to her a dirty soda because she puts ice cream in her coffee. That's her cream.
My favorite dessert is an affogato.
Yeah.
And this is a great combination. And if you're putting cream in coffee, like heavy cream, like you're not doing yourself any health
no.
problems by putting like sugary cream in there. If you put sugar and cream in, it's basically just cold sugar and cream is ice cream. I love yeah. this. Here's my concern though. Her favorite flavor is strawberry.
Right.
Is she putting strawberry ice cream in the coffee?
You know, it's a great question. It doesn't say. I as someone who liked to have strawberry ice cream in my Coca-Cola, I can't judge. So I support Dolly. But one thing I really liked about the ice cream method and how she decides how much to put into her coffee, it's based on color. She wants her coffee to be tan. And I feel the exact same way about how I put in my milk. It's based on color. There's such a visual element to my morning coffee routine. I totally get it, Dolly. It made me feel really good that like she and I had something in common. But then I learned she also has something in common with Mark Wahlberg, which is that she starts her day at 3 a.m.
3 in the morning. What are you doing, Dolly? What are you doing?
This is the thing about like someone like Dolly Parton. You're like, wow, she's just like us. She puts coffee she puts cream in her coffee. And you're like, nope, she maximizes her day by waking up at 3 o'clock. And I'm just like,
another
fuck.
Great detail is her coffee. Doesn't just say coffee specifically. Folgers coffee.
Folgers.
Which I love. It's so old school. It's so like I was sort of raised in the 40s and 50s. I'm sorry, Dolly, if I just aged you. But like it's just so old school. Folgers. I don't even know how to make Folgers. If someone gave me like a can of Folgers, I would be like, do I add hot water? Do I heat it? Like
you
I
would have no idea what to do.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure I could read the package, you can figure it out. But.
Yeah, you'd get there. There actually are a lot of good instant coffee options. I want to try them on this pod. We will in the future. She also follows a low-carb diet. A lot of egg salad, apparently, for her. But on the week,
she keeps egg salad on deck.
Yeah.
She made this, like, I just, like, she's got, like, a big salad bowl full of egg salad just in her fridge, just in case.
You know, I hate egg salad, so I found that really gross. But whatever. Fair enough. And then lastly, she is a big fan of Taco Bell, and she loves to enjoy tacos with her husband. She also said she liked Indian, Italian, and Mexican food, but really, Taco Bell, just like us.
One thing she said that I absolutely love, Dolly, and Dolly is perfect. She said, I don't like pretty food. I want my food to be ugly. If it's pretty, it's not going to taste good. And I was like, preach. Dolly.
She's like, if it's pretty, count me out.
Love it. Dolly Parton, you are our North Star. You are
true for so many people.
Our deity, Dolly Parton.
Next, moving into the cheese crime world, one of our favorite worlds to be in. Yes.
Dipping back into the cheese crime world.
We told you about cheese theft, but very, very expensive one. The makers of official Parmigiano Reggiano, meaning it comes from Parma in Italy, has introduced something to fight against counterfeit cheese. They're inserting a technology that you shouldn't even be able to notice into the cheese to make sure that there is not fake Parmesan cheese going around that you think is real. And this article comes to us from Yahoo News. It actually begins with a huge assumption. Most people understand, hopefully, that when they grab Kraft Parmesan cheese, they're not getting official Parmigiano Reggiano from Italy. But I'm just like, do most people know
that? Yeah. Like, I understand there's a difference in quality that, like, if I get the little, like, plastic tin from the fridge that's Kraft, that's going to taste very different than if I'm at a steakhouse and they, like, freshly shave it off of a wheel. Okay. But I understand the bourbon stuff and the champagne and the difference and all that, but I did not know that Parmesan cheese had to be from Parma.
I recently learned that like from some food show, but I it's like a learning within the last 5 years. So it's not like, I just take issue with this article, but anyway, the consortium, which is the group of Parmesan Reggiano makers based in Italy, have introduced the P-Chip Micro, which goes into the, casein label, which goes around, it's like, you know, around it essentially. And it's a blockchain crypto anchor that creates a digital twin for physical items. It's a scannable.
Say it again.
It's a blockchain crypto anchor that creates a digital twin for physical items. This scannable new food tag is smaller than a grain of salt and highly durable,
20 minutes.
Delivering next generation visibility and traceability.
How is it scannable if it's smaller than a grain of salt? How do you know where it is to scan it? And number two, I thought all of this was way too much for cheese until you get to the numbers. The finances of what's at stake here is mind-blowing. Give them the numbers, Julia.
I mean, this is a $2.44 billion market industry. And the black market, fraudulent cheese, is $2.08 billion. So it's like a lot of money going on.
Let's say you invested $200 million into fighting fake Parmesan cheese.
Cheese fraud, yeah.
You would get back potentially $1 billion.
I mean, it's worth it. It's just shocking. Worth it.
This consortium, first of all, I want to just thank Mike for putting the Godfather music underneath this whole thing once he's taken consortium. Because this is big business.
And big time.
I imagine that whatever conference room that the consortium gets together in is well catered and everyone's wearing suits, and it looks a lot like that scene in Godfather when the baseball bat comes out.
I've only seen that movie one time. Sorry, this is not the rewatchable. Let's check that out if you really love the Godfather.
I might have gotten it wrong. It could be Goodfellas. You know.
All right. Shall we move on?
Yes.
It's a very topical topic. It's coming up real soon. The Queen of England, you may know her as Her Madge or Elizabeth R. Her platinum jubilee is coming up. She's been queen for 70 years. That is absolutely insane. And they just announced that she'll be having like a big concert with like, I gotta say, I feel like the Queen could do better. Like Ed Sheeran's not performing. He's like really famous Britain right now, but whatever. No Harry Styles. Like, okay. They're bringing back Queen. With Adam Lambert as the lead because Freddie Mercury is dead. It's just like bizarre. I thought the Queen could do better. Anyway.
Yeah, who's booking this?
I know. It's super weird. And then they're like, there's all these British people who are going to be participating. But like, again, no Ed Sheeran. Elton John will be there, but be a tape.
He's like, I'm doing Oklahoma City that day. I can't be there, Queen.
Ed Sheeran was in Bridget Jones's Diary 3. So like, if he can't show up to the Queen's Platinum Jubilee, but he can show up for Bridget Jones's Diary, we have
it
a problem.
Like an extra in Game of Thrones season 7. Like, come on.
Yeah, I forgot he was in that first episode.
Yeah. He didn't have a, he was like singing like it's a bar by a fire.
Anyway, lemon and Amirati trifle are the official pud, as they say on the Great British Bake Off, of the Queen's Platinum Jubilee. And I mention it because one of the judges who decided on this was Mary Berry from the Great British Bake Off. I know that Mike Wargon is excited about this. Anyway, there were several finalists, and the judges included not only Mary Berry, but also the Fortnum & Mason executive pastry chef, Roger Pisey, former Bake Off winner, Raul Mondal, master chef, judge Monica Galletti. You know, it's a real who's who.
And I have a question. I had no idea that Marion Berry was part of Bake Off.
Yeah, Mary Berry was one of the original judges, and she's now no longer with the show.
Not Marion Berry.
Mary Berry.
Former DC man.
No, it's a different person.
Okay.
Good joke. Good one. Try it. That might have worked better if we were in the same room together. Anyway, this pudding is made of the buttercream and raspberry jam, and that is one of Queen Victoria's favorite. Oh, excuse me, that's the Victoria sponge. I take it back.
Yeah, please.
Sorry, please. I actually love a Victoria sponge, which is a classic dish that they make on Bake Off. And my friend Catherine and I, we ate it together at Kensington Palace. Anyway, this trifle, this pud, is crafted with layers of lemon curd Swiss roll, absolutely delicious. St. Clement's jelly, lemon custard, a mandarin coulis, amaretti biscuits, and whipped fresh cream. This sounds fucking delicious. It's also topped with more amaretti biscuits and a jeweled chocolate bark. I mean, anything that the basis of it is a Swiss roll of any kind, I am 100% in. This sounds delicious.
There's so much going on. When you look at the picture, the don't sleep on the jeweled chocolate bark. It juts out like stalactites or stalagmites. Everyone come from the bottom. And it's just like a crown. It looks sort of like a crown.
It looks really good.
It's so appropriate. It looks really good. So many layers. A little too much jelly for my taste.
No, not
like
me.
There's a little too much. That should be a thinner layer of jelly, but the whole thing looks fantastic.
I just need to know like how sweet it is. Like, because some of these ingredients actually don't sound that sweet. Like a lemon custard, much sugar? Yeah, I'm just curious. But this looks delicious. Like literally my mouth is watering. I kid you not.
So do you get a small cup of this or do you get a slice of a big, huge thing of it?
I would guess that for like this catering crowd, they probably have like small cups.
That's what I'm thinking too, that you get an individual thing, which I would much prefer than getting like a slice of something that's so like gelatinous.
Me
you
too. Know what I mean? This is really personal food news, but just side note, last week I went to a dinner and for dessert, they handed out like trays of four different kinds of desserts. And they were like mini, not, they're like smaller than your average handheld dessert, and it was awesome because then you could try so many different things. It wasn't too big of a serving. I loved it. I love a small dessert that's just like a bite. It's fantastic.
It's great. I mean, no one's going to disagree with that. I would rather have four desserts than one dessert.
Yeah, of course. You want a sample. You want to try a lot of different things.
I love variety. Yes.
Me too.
This episode is brought to you by State Farm. You might say all kinds of stuff when things go wrong, but these are the words you really need to remember. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. They've got options to fit your unique insurance needs, meaning you can talk to your agent to choose the coverage you need, have coverage options to protect the things you value most, file a claim right on the State Farm mobile app, and even reach a real person when you need to talk to someone. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Your spring is about to get a lot more power with the Home Depot. Get gas-like power from mowing, trimming, and blowing with the Ryobi 18-volt One Plus system starting at just $89. Mowing power that can take on a third of an acre with one charge. Trimming power with up to 2 hours of runtime. And blowing power with 110 miles per hour of clearing force. All on one interchangeable battery. Get cordless gas-like power for the entire lawn with the Ryobi 18-volt One Plus system. Only at the Home Depot. How doers get more done.
Next story. This comes to us from the New York Times by Priya Krishna, who is frequently on Recipe Club. So check that out. Anyway, Jacoby, dress codes for restaurants are back. She gave a few examples, including Les Trois Chevaux here in New York, Olivetta in LA, which I had to mention because it is owned by former Ladies of London cast member Marissa Hermer. I know. I've been following Marissa very closely. Olivetta is actually very, very like hip. Ladies of London, incredible Bravo show. Can't wait for Real Housewives of Dubai starring Caroline Stanberry. Anyway.
I love Caroline.
They're basically saying can't wear jeans, can't wear shorts, can't look like crap. And
Is it a blazer only thing?
It depends on the place, but it's like kind of sort of like a movement towards dress codes. And I'm mostly on board, but there was one thing in this article that I did not care for, which is apparently there is a restaurant in Houston. It's called Juliet. So I'm really upset about this. It's like insulting, insulting the name, the brand. Clothing emitting offensive odors is not permitted. Like, what's an offensive odor? You know, like, is it why do you have too much cologne?
I'm like, do we have to make these rules? Do we have to say that out loud?
Like, I'm like, who are you targeting with that? Like, it's just like, that's messed up.
Was that a big problem before you had to put the sign up?
Are you worried about people not showering, or like, who are you targeting with this?
This is like last week's balcony to balcony. It's like balcony to balcony jumping. It's like, why are we being so specific about this? Like,
I know.
I'm upset now.
Dress code, I support.
I'm into dress code, but that thing I'm not really into. But my only thing about the dress code is like, I want them to be able to communicate that to me in advance in a manner where I don't feel like offended. You know what I mean? So like when I make the reservation, there should be some sort of communication or something like that. Because I just want to know. I don't want to get there and then be like, sorry, you can't eat here because you're wearing jeans. And I've got like nice jeans and I've got a button up and a blazer and hard bottom shoes. And they're like, sorry, you can't eat here. I'm like, how am I supposed to know that?
I know.
Like, when I got a ticket one time for not having a bell on my bike. I'm like, what are we talking about here?
I didn't know that was a law.
Exactly. I'm like, I'm not paying this ticket. I mean, I did go through a red light. He added the bell on the bike thing. I was just like,
nevertheless,
I need to know in advance. Yeah.
That is bizarre.
Yes.
Yeah, I agree with you. You always say to me, you've been saying this to others, I'm sure as well, it's not what you say, it's how you say it. And so if you want to have a dress code, great. Like, we're on board. I'd love to have a fancy night out. But just how about, like, delicately, when I confirm my reservation, send an email, be like, we can't wait to see you. Come to impress, wear whatever, the best dressed, like make it a rhyme as I just did. And
yeah, I mean, also it'd be like, do you have any food allergies? Like, we're going to send you an email just to make sure your experience is perfect. And you can kind of like act like you're trying to make their experience nice, but really you're just burying in there. Like, you know, the pill and the peanut butter is don't wear jeans and don't look like a slob and don't smell.
Yeah.
But you're asking about food allergies and preferences.
When you're getting specific, asking me about my food allergies, please be specific in response with what you do not want to see. Because there's this restaurant in Dallas called Catbird, per the New York Times, where they say smart, casual, or better. And I'm just like, what the hell does that mean? Like,
what? Smart?
Yeah, I know. You're in Dallas. Like, what are you talking about?
Do not say anything about clothes to me.
I know.
Better. Like, what do you mean, or better? So like the bars at Smart Casual? Okay.
I know. And I went to an event recently where the dress code was like festive cocktail. And I'm just like, what is that? Like, what kind of shoes am I supposed to be wearing? Like, I need specifics, you know, or like pictures or something like that. Recommended outfits, whatever. I'm on board, but be specific. That's what I'm saying. And also don't be rude. Offensive odors, come on.
That's ridiculous.
It really is. All right, let's move on. This is a really intriguing story. This is from Gizmodo. Some geniuses at Johns Hopkins University have introduced a burrito tape to help keep your burrito packed tightly as you eat it. It's called Tasty Tape. It's mostly, it's almost invisible and it's edible. I am curious how you feel about like a tape to keep your burrito sealed, Jacoby.
Okay, a couple things. We don't need this invention. I love these kids are doing this. This is, shout to them. I hope they make billions of dollars. But I have a mechanism to keep my burrito together. It's called my hand. I hold the burrito. I don't do like a handsless burrito contest. So I hold the burrito together. The problem are the people that make the burritos. I'm at Chipotle and I'm like, bro, that is too much stuff. Like, why is this like a challenge? Like, I watch them. I'm like, can I have some lettuce? I'm like, and I watch them do it. I'm like, what are we trying to do here? That's your fault.
I can't believe this take, this story has turned into you blaming the anonymous, wonderful people of Chipotle. Back off, man. I love Chipotle.
No. Well, it's also, there's a mom and pop burrito and taco place right by where I work, which is, it's delicious. But every time they're making the burrito, I'm like, dial it back.
Counterpoint. Burritos should be eaten with chips, and the chips are used to funnel the excess into your mouth. And so, you want it to be stuffed to the gills. And you know what? It's on you to figure out when you're done. Listen to your body. And so get chips, shovel that extra. Like, I prefer to not have a fork for a burrito. Like, take a few bites to open it up and then use the chip as like a shovel and then keep eating the outside and like taking nibbles. But it's primarily a two-hander where you are using one hand to hold the burrito and the other for the chip to dip. And like, that is the best way to eat a burrito and does not require this tape. Also, I lived in San Francisco for 3.5 years.
Big burritos.
huge burritos, big burrito town. LA's tacos, San Francisco's burritos. It's like, it's just a huge, huge difference. And you know what they do, they use there to wonderful effect? Fucking tinfoil. It's just not that complicated. Yeah, exactly. Wrap it up. It's just not hard.
I would say, if someone said to me, like, let's solve a problem with burrito eating, I would say it's more like liquid based. It's the dripping out of the bottom.
The beans.
It's not the middle staying together.
It's the
And I like a lot of lettuce, and sometimes the lettuce comes with a little liquid and just in the salsa. And it's like all of a sudden it's the liquidity of the content of the burrito is the problem. So make a tape for that, Johns Hopkins kids.
I know.
Sorry, I just came after them. I love you guys. You guys are great children.
Some problems don't need to be solved, aka they're not problems. And I don't view.
Yeah, I've got a hand. I've got a hand to keep
this is just not something that we need in this world. But I guess, like, cool. You know, there may be some other ways to use edible tape. Like, I feel like in baking, it would be like a lot more useful when you're instead of like having to use icing. But like burrito is just not where I need it.
See, you know what? Great invention. Bad application.
Yeah, exactly.
I like where your head's at. I'm trying to think of other things off the top of my head, but I can't. But it's like, I'm sure there is a use for this in the culinary world. You guys just sort of misapplied it, pun very much intended.
How about also, like, for transit? Like, you know, let's say Mike was bringing something more delicate than 120 bagels to Atlanta, and he wanted to make sure it didn't move around in his bag or, like, on the tray, you know? Like, he's, like, holding a tray of cupcakes for some celebration. Tape that shit down so it doesn't move. That could be useful.
Tape it down.
Yeah.
Tape it down.
Exactly. All right. Let's move on. One more story before we get into personal food news.
Well, I really think that one thing about the burrito tape, I think this is sort of like Facebook starting out as a dating app. You know what I mean? It's just like you guys, you invented something that's valuable. You just have to pivot.
Yeah. It's just, you need new marketers, or you need marketing altogether. Just position it differently, you know? All right, one more story. And shout out to the Washington Post. If you're interested in food stories that are also like lifestyle stories, they've got them for you. I feel like we've gotten some really good ones from them. I appreciate your work. Thank you, Karina Elwood and the Washington Post. Now, this is about the beloved Old Bay Spice. Do you have an emotional attachment of any kind to Old Bay Spice? People will really fucking love it.
Yes, it should not be regional. This should be a worldwide phenomenon. This should be like salt, pepper, Old Bay. It should always be an option. If you serve French fries, you should also have Old Bay on the table.
Yeah. It's just like, it's interesting that it is so local. Have you ever had Tony Sacheres? It's like another kind of seasoning from Louisiana.
Yes. Yeah.
That's another one that I'm just like, why isn't that more widespread? Anyway, the occasion for this article is that Goldfish and Old Bay have collabed for Goldfish Old Bay seasoned crackers, because apparently people were doing that on their own. I didn't know this, that this was like a common snack that people in the Maryland area were having, but now we all can because they've packaged it and they're selling it. Amazing.
When you think about that, I've never had Old Bay Goldfish, but when you think about it, it's a no-brainer. It's like, yeah, of course. Yeah, that'd be great.
Yeah, I mean, I just basically love all goldfish of all kinds, so I can't imagine this being bad. Anyway, this is like turned into a really moving story because the creator of Old Bay Spice was a German man who fled Germany after Kristallnacht in the 30s, and he was having a hard time finding work. He had been a spice merchant back in Germany, and he started his own spice company, which turned out Old Bay Spice. So it's like a beautiful regional story. So lovely.
There's some great details. Like, he was selling individual spices. Then he was like looking at the fishermen create their own spice mix. So he's like, let me sell the spice mix. And then he wanted to patent it, but he didn't want to give away the ingredients or the secret. So he put tiny little hints of like cinnamon and cumin and things that you usually wouldn't use in a like fish spice mix. And he found out that those was like a little happy accident. It was like, oh, look at that.
Yeah.
It gave Old Bay like its own little twist. And then he gave it away for free. It was very like crack dealer. He gave it away for free and everybody just came back for it. And now it's a family business.
Yeah. And people have tried to copy it, but they can't because it is like truly a secret recipe. And it's just a great story. I don't know. It's like such a beloved item. It's cool. And there's a cool history behind it. And another detail I really enjoyed was that the original spice grinder is in a museum in Maryland. I'm just like, yeah, preserve that shit.
See, Julia, I'm glad you brought up that detail, because like when I was reading the article, I was like, I need to see that. Why? Why do I need to see a spice grinder that created Old Bay?
Know,
why?
It's historical.
What am I going to do? It's not the Mona Lisa. I'm going to go there and be like, wow, look at that. I don't even know what a spice grinder looks like.
Hopefully the world will be around far enough in the future. But I was recently in Mexico City and like went to this archaeological museum and saw like all these old artifacts from the like earlier civilizations in Mexico, like from the Aztecs and even before. And I'm like, you know, future civilizations will come to Maryland and see this spice grinder. And they'll be like, oh, that's how they did it back then before everything was like synthetic fake food. So
yeah, before we're taking food pills.
Yeah, exactly. Before we had edible tape. All right, Jacoby, hit me with your personal food news. You've been in Miami. I'm dying to know what it's been like. You know, it's hard when your food routine is disrupted. That's the hardest part of travel as an old person. You can't just be like, oh, no, like whatever's around
whatsoever. That is, I do not agree with that whatsoever. That's wow. The hard part of travel is having your food routine interrupted.
Yeah,
that's
it's hard of it.
For you. That's yeah. not part of it.
I had a 4:30 flight yesterday.
I get excited to travel just for food reasons.
But I had a 4:30 flight yesterday and I was like, what am I going to do for dinner? There's no good options at the airport. It was like an in-between time to pick something up. It fucked things up. So I had Pop-Tart minis on the plane. But this is your personal food news. Talk to me about what's been going on down in the 305.
Okay. I have not had any truly Miami dishes. Right after this recording, I plan on going to a Cuban restaurant.
Nice.
That is something that's very important to me. However, I did have a personal food news that does relate to this pod and things that previously been stated. I went to a coffee place that I've never gone to. It's on my walk to work. It's called the Cubo Cubo Cafe or something. It's on right in Fulton. I've never gone there and they serve coffee. I was getting coffee. I always go to McNally Jackson, which is a wonderful place to drink coffee and wine and beer and read. And I went in there. I said, can I have an iced coffee with milk? She goes, we don't have iced coffee, but we have cold brew. And I was like, all right, fine. And I remember thinking, like, this can't be that much different of an experience. The first sip, I was like, this is not as good as iced coffee. And not only that, I found it to like make me, and I have a very high caffeine tolerance. It made me very jittery. It just reinforced the revolution that you have started, Julia Littman, that cold brew is not only lesser than iced coffee, it's kind of trash.
Yeah.
And that experience just really reinforced that to me, Julia, that food take, unlike many of your other ones, food is one of the most stressful parts of traveling, is correct.
I love when you agree with me, man. That's so great. Yeah, it's trash. I feel like everyone's being tricked. It's sometimes I'm just like, what is going on? Why does everyone like this crappy coffee? I have this problem a lot in LA where I just was. Well, thanks for joining the revolution. The only good cold brew is La Colombe. I love the Brazilian blend. It's so fucking good. My personal food news, as mentioned, I was on a plane yesterday. I had the first row at the bulkhead, not in first class, but like I was like in the very beginning, the very front. So I got to see everyone come on board. This man walked on holding two large shopping bags of Porto's, which is delicious. Porto's is a bakery in LA. They have like these amazing like potato balls, also really good desserts. It was all great. But I thought of Mike
30 seconds
when I saw this man carrying these shopping bags. He was just like, fuck it. I'm checking everything. My only carry-ons, my two carry-on items are Porto's.
And
I guess he just loves people back in New York and knew they love Porto's and decided to bring with him. But I was like, wow, I guess this is more common than I realized. And this seems like a business opportunity because once again, it was bonkers.
Again, this is Mike Morgan has started a revolution. Like these bagels at this Bar Mitzvah have changed everything. He listens to food news and he was like, people need Porto's in New York. So I'm going to check my bags. And then I wonder if anyone made the calculation, because you're supposed to have like one personal item and one carry-on bag, but he's got two bags technically, but they're technically also like personal items.
I know.
Could he have brought it all, like a backpack as well? Would that have gotten past him?
I don't know. They're kind of strict about it these days. So I don't know, but I was so flabbergasted. I was like, wow. This man loves his family or his friends, whoever.
To borrow something from another great podcast, Soft Move or Boss Move, bringing two big bags of Porto's.
I don't know. It made me rethink my shock about Mike, but the Mike situation was really the quantity this guy had less. And also the fact that like he wasn't actually going to be bringing fresh bagels to the Bat Mitzvah. So that was upsetting as well. But I don't know. I'm processing all this information. I'll let you know how I'm feeling in the future. But so
Wait. We're doing a food news follow-up about your own feelings?
Yeah, we are.
This is amazing. This is the level of detail which Julia Littman is committed to expressing herself on this podcast accurately, that she needs a full week to know how she feels about someone bringing bakery items on the plane.
Well, I'm just the big part of it is like, am I willing to retract any of my comments that I made about Mike's situation? You know, like I need to rethink that one based on what I witness on the plane. So sorry, Jacoby. I just want to have a nuanced conversation. I don't want to have a take, you know, we live in the take economy and I'm resisting.
I'm not being critical. I'm celebrating you. I'm celebrating your commitment to just make sure that you're expressing yourself appropriately.
Thank you so much. On that note, I hope you have a great Cuban food experience in Miami. Avoid all of the cold brew. I think I'm rooting for the Celtics, so go Celtics. This is being recorded before game two. Thank you so much to Mike Wargon for producing this episode. And thank you all for listening.